So let's begin with a little review of what we've covered here so far before we move on to the next few points. So this retreat, of course, is Shamatha retreat. Shamatha normally is translated into English as calm abiding, and it's a concentration practice. It's a practice of developing a calm, clear, focused mind. And within this practice, as we've seen, it's important to have what's called the preconditions, meaning to have a supportive, conducive environment and lifestyle to support this practice, to make it most effective. And then, of course, to prepare ourselves well at the beginning of each meditation session in terms of preparing the body, speech and mind. So we've had a look at that already. And the actual practice, of course, as with any practice, has two parts. There's the actual meditation session, where we're trying to, in this case, cultivate these particular qualities. And then also we need to continue to cultivate this in daily life as well. And we're going to be looking at that a little bit later in the retreat. And within the meditation practice, we began to look at the qualities that we need to cultivate in this practice. And generally in this shamatha practice, two qualities are mentioned in the text, the quality of stability and the quality of clarity, meaning to cultivate a stable mind, to be able to focus on any given object without becoming distracted, and to be able to focus in a very clear way to overcome dullness. But I added a third quality that's often not mentioned in the text, and that is relaxation. And this is important, particularly in our modern day society, because we tend to have a very hectic, fast-paced life, a lot of agitation, a lot of stress in our life. And our default mode when we want to focus on anything is we tend to tighten. We tend to clamp down to focus because our minds are so chaotic. And that's generally what we do in anything we do when we need to focus. That can sort of work if you only want to focus for a short time, but if you want to focus for a sustained period, then of course with that tightness and tension, then we often get very fatigued and also get very agitated. So this is not the sort of concentration we're trying to develop here in the spiritual path. We need to have a concentration on the basis of a relaxed mind. So relaxation is very important, and something that I'll be emphasizing a lot in this retreat is really relax, 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 relax. And on the basis of relaxation, then we can work on stabilizing the mind to be able to focus without becoming distracted. And then on the basis of a stable mind, we can improve the clarity of our attention, a more clear mind. So what I'd like to do now is to have a look at the other three points here in terms of the actual meditation practice, the objects to use in the practice, what are the tools we use in the practice, and then what faults there are and how to overcome faults in the practice. So what object should we use in this practice, shamatha practice? The general recommendation in the texts, of course, is to use the object that works best for you. And there can be one of many different objects are possible. But one object that is probably most widely emphasized in the Buddhist traditions is the breath. Focus on the sensations involved in breathing. And this is probably the object that will be the object for most of us as a beginner in the shamatha practice. And there are a number of advantages with using the breath. And the meditation texts also often say, if you're the sort of person who's highly discursive, always thinking, 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 then definitely the best object for you is the breath. The reason is, of course, is that we're, particularly in our modern society, we're caught up in conceptual thinking a lot. We're all living in the conceptual mind, so much so that often we've lost touch with the physical reality, even lost touch with our own body. So by focusing on the physical sensations of the breath, of course, it gets us out of our conceptual mind and into the body. So this is a good start. And most of our conceptual thinking is about the past and the future. Very rarely are we actually in the present moment. And certainly from a Buddhist perspective, living in the past and the future is a source of a lot of unhappiness. And even some modern studies are coming to this same result, to conclusion that if we live in the past and the future, that causes a lot of unnecessary unhappiness in our life. The physical sensations of the breath, of course, only happen in the present moment. So by focusing on them, it gets us out of our conceptual mind into the body and gets us out of the past and the future into the present moment. So probably for most of us, for most of you, the breath will be the object that will probably work the best. Now, within the breath, there are a number of variations. The first one we've already looked at in the previous session. And that's called sort of the full body approach to this practice. And that is simply noticing sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breath. So that's a very diffuse object. And this is particularly good for working with relaxation. So remember the three qualities we're trying to develop. Relaxation, stability and clarity, and they respectively, the faults related to those are the fault here is that we tend to be too tight or too tense in our focus, so we need to relax. And of course here the fault for stability is distraction. But often in the texts, the fault that's listed here is not distraction, but is excitement. Because the most common form of distraction is that we get distracted by the so-called sense pleasures, something exciting pulls us away. And the fault for clarity, of course, is dullness. If we're having a very dull attention, we're not being able to see things clearly, where our mind is very dull. And the technical word usually in the text for that is laxity. So this practice here of just noticing sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breathing, this is particularly useful for working with relaxation. And in particular, what we're going to be doing each evening in this retreat is doing this practice using what's called the corpse posture, the shavasana, lying flat on our back. Because there, of course, the body is very relaxed. So the full body, a variation of breath practice, is very helpful for working with relaxation. And then another variation of the breath practice that's emphasized in a number of Buddhist traditions, particularly a lot of the Theravada traditions, is the abdomen, is to focus on the sensations of the rising and lowering of the abdomen as you breathe. A fairly large area of focus here, and so this is particularly good for stabilizing the mind, for working with stability. So this is what we're going to be working with tomorrow. And then the third variation of the breath practice is to focus on the entrance of the nostrils. this very small area here at the entrance of the nostrils. Because that's a much smaller object of focus here, this is very helpful for improving the clarity of attention. So each one of those is very useful for, in particular, developing each one of those three qualities. That, of course, doesn't mean you need to do this to relax and then the abdomen to stabilize and the nostrils to be clear. So we don't have to go through each one of those, but they're particularly suited for those particular qualities. So we're going to be working with the abdomen tomorrow, and then we're going to look at the nostrils practice the day after. So they're in the full body we've already looked at, and we're going to be doing again in this session. And we're going to be doing the full body every evening session of this retreat. So this is the breath, and this is probably the most common object that people use in this practice. The second object that we're going to be using in this retreat is the mind itself. And here the object is our own mind and whatever mental events arise within the mind. So here basically in this practice we're learning to become the observer or witness of our own mind and simply observing thoughts and emotions and memories as they arise and pass, arise and pass. Again, the object is just the mind or the space of the mind and then all the mental events that arise within that space. Now, many people find this more challenging than the breath. One reason, of course, is that the breath is something tangible, physical, whereas the mind is not, so it's a little bit more subtle object. And also the other reason where people find this quite challenging is that we don't generally have the habit of observing our mind, is that whenever some mental event arises in our mind, when some thought or emotion or memory comes up, we automatically identify with it and we follow it. We're constantly following these things. So people find it quite difficult to then actually sit back and watch these things arise and pass because we don't have the habit of doing that. But this, again, I think in our modern society, can bring enormous benefits to us because really in our modern society, I think we are so much the slaves of our mind. We're often just in our conceptual mind all the time. We're always following all these stories and we always get overwhelmed by our thoughts, emotions and memories. So we really are the slaves of our mind. And often also, if some unpleasant thing comes up in our mind, and we don't know how to deal with it, what do we usually do? We just try and suppress it. We try and stuff it back down. So suppressing these mental events also is not very helpful because they often manifest as physical problems in the body and really create a lot of problems for us in our life. So we are really the slaves of our mind. We're often tormented by our mind. Whereas if we do this shamatha practice of observing our mind, developing the ability to simply observe the mind and observe thoughts and emotions and memories as they arise and pass, then we will become the masters of our mind. And our minds will naturally become more quiet. Because every time we follow a thought, emotion or a memory or so forth, we're feeding it. So we're just feeding the habit of more of this garbage coming up in our mind constantly. And of course also by suppressing it, we're feeding it. Whereas if we, in this practice, if we observe these mental events arise and pass, we're not feeding them. So the habit of them coming up will get weaker and weaker and weaker. You'll find that our mind will naturally become more quiet and still. And then also if we really develop this practice, we're going to become the masters of our mind, meaning if some strong mental event were to arise, we could simply be present with it and watch it as it arises and passes without becoming overwhelmed by it. So this, even though many people find this more challenging than the breath, I think it can bring enormous benefits to many of us in our lives. So we're going to be on day four, we're going to be looking at this practice and spending a whole day working with the mind. Then on day five, we're going to be doing the looking at the third object. Sometimes this is called shamatha with no object, or sometimes it's simply called awareness of awareness practice. In this practice here, we're simply becoming aware of being aware. The difference between this and the second practice is in the second practice, we are observing the mind and any mental events that arise in the mind. Whereas in the third practice here, experientially, it's not so much one of observing the mind, but simply resting in the mind itself, simply being aware of being aware. And in this practice, we're not interested in any appearances, thoughts and emotions and memories. So whereas here, we're observing those mental events. This is more subtle practice than this, and some people find this even more challenging, but some people actually are very much drawn to this practice from the very beginning. Again, I think in our modern society, this practice can be very, very helpful, because by simply resting in awareness itself, we can rest in the stillness of the mind. And if we can really get in the habit of simply resting in the stillness of the mind, and not always identifying with mental events, then we can also do this in our daily life. We can be in that stillness of our mind in the midst of all the things that are going on. So it's very much grounded. And also by simply resting in awareness itself, we start to get a little taste of the nature of the mind itself. So that realizing the nature of the mind itself, of course, is a vipassana practice. It's an insight practice. So this practice, even though it's a shamatha practice, can be a very good bridge into the vipassana practice, to come to realize the nature of the mind, to realize the nature of reality. So that's another advantage with this, using the awareness of awareness. Of course, there are other objects that are possible to use. Some of you who may have had some exposure to Tibetan Buddhism, particularly the Lam Rim approach to practice. In the Lam Rim, when they talk about shamatha practice, then often the object that is very much recommended or talked about is to use a mental image of a Buddha as the object. Now, many of us find that quite difficult because we're not familiar with what a Buddha looks like, and many of us have difficulties with visualization in general. So I think many people find that very difficult to do, to use a mental image of a Buddha as the object. And there are other possibilities as well, but I think particularly in our modern society, these three objects in particular, I think can be very, very beneficial, and that's why we're focusing on these three in this particular retreat. Is there any questions about any of these objects? Of course, I haven't looked at these in detail, and we're going to be looking at each of those in detail over the coming days. But is there any general questions at the moment about any of that? So we'll be using, we've used that a little bit today, we're going to use that every evening. Day two, the abdomen. Day three, the nostrils. Day four, the mind. And day five, awareness of awareness. And then day six, seven, and eight, then you get to choose whichever object you want to use during those 3 days. So that's the objects for the practice. So now we're going to have a look at the main tools for this practice. But actually, does anyone have that chart? Or maybe we... Has everyone got their copy of the chart from over there? If not, we'll hand them out now. We'll be using this a little bit each evening over the coming 5 days, so we can keep it handy for that. So now with the two main tools, we can actually see these are sort of symbolized in the diagram here down the bottom. We see the meditator at the bottom, and in their left hand is a rope, and in the right hand a hook. So the rope is the rope of mindfulness. So the two main tools we use The first tool that we're using in this practice is mindfulness. In Sanskrit, that's smriti. In Pali, it's sati. And mindfulness is simply the faculty of sustaining attention on a familiar object without forgetfulness or distraction. So it's simply our ability to focus or to hold a given object without becoming distracted. The Sanskrit word smriti and the Pali word sati literally means to remember. So it's to remember the object, to not forget the object, to be able to hold the object, to not forget it, to not become distracted. Now, as I mentioned earlier, mindfulness is now becoming very popular in our modern society, but often the word mindfulness in a lot of modern day traditions is used a little bit differently than this, simply remembering the object. Often the word mindfulness is, in a lot of modern day traditions, is simply defined as a sort of non-judgmental awareness of whatever is arising in the present moment. Of course, this is a very good thing to do, but this is not really how the word mindfulness was originally defined in the Buddhist texts. So here, in this retreat, when we see the word mindfulness, it's simply our ability to hold the object, to remember the object, to not become distracted. So this is symbolized by the rope in the meditator's hand. And the second tool, is called introspection. That's symbolized by the hook in their right hand. And introspection is simply our ability to monitor the mind, to monitor our attention, to monitor the mindfulness. How is our mindfulness going? Are we becoming dull or distracted? So introspection is like quality control. It's like a little spy in the corner of our mind checking whether our mindfulness is still holding the object, or are we now becoming dull or distracted? So these are the two main tools that we use in this practice. And so if we go over onto the back of your handout, up the top there, it says shamatha is attained by progressing through the 9 stages. And the 9 stages are these 9 diagrams along this windy road here, which we're going to start to look at a little bit each evening. So it's attained by progressing through the 9 stages, relying on the 8 antidotes to abandon the 5 faults. So we can see a table there which has the 5 faults and the 8 antidotes. So let's briefly have a look at those now. The first fault here mentioned is laziness. And the first antidote to laziness is faith. Now, like everything in our daily life, if we see no benefit in some activity in our life, then we tend to be very lazy when it comes to doing that activity. So similarly here, if we don't really see much benefit in this practice, of course we're going to be very lazy when it comes to doing this meditation. So to overcome that is that we should reflect on the benefits of the practice. And so if we can really appreciate the benefits of this practice, then we're going to have the first antidote of faith. So here, faith is faith that the practice is going to bring us benefit. So of course, we've already mentioned some of the benefits of this practice already. So by doing this shamatha practice, we're going to develop a calm, clear, focused mind. I think that's something all of us would like to have, which means we're going to be less stress, a more peaceful mind, more effective in everything we do in our life, much less agitation, much less mental imbalance. We're going to enjoy the simple pleasures in life much more, and also probably find some health benefits as well. So these are all very mundane benefits for this practice. And then, of course, in terms of the spiritual path, the benefits of this practice are that this is the basis of all other meditations, which means if we can have a calm, clear, focused mind, all of our other practices will become much more effective. We'll be able to more effectively develop insight in our Vipassana practice. We'll be able to more effectively cultivate loving kindness and compassion and the other meditations as well. So everything else will work much more effectively. So if we can really reflect on these benefits of the shamatha practice, we're going to have faith in the practice. We're going to have faith that the practice is going to bring us enormous benefit. So we'll have the first antidote. Then if we have faith in the practice that it will benefit us, we'll have the second antidote, which means we'll have aspiration. We'll want to do the practice. And then, of course, if we have aspiration to do the practice, we'll have the third antidote, and that is we'll put effort into the practice. And if we put effort into the practice, we're going to start to have the fourth antidote, pliancy. Pliancy here means flexibility or serviceability of body and mind. And I'm going to talk more about pliancy a little bit later, in a few days' time in the evening. But basically now, we don't really have so much pliancy of body and mind. We have a lot of, our body has a lot of aches and pains in it when we're trying to sit down and meditate. Our mind has a lot of resistance to the practice. Pliancy means our body and mind will become more flexible and serviceable. They won't create problems or resistance to the practice. And that comes through the more effort we put into the practice. But I'll speak more about pliancy in the coming days. So this is the first fault of laziness, and so the antidotes are those four antidotes. The second fault mentioned here is forgetfulness. So here forgetfulness can also mean forgetting the instructions, but also forgetting the object. So of course the antidote to forgetfulness is mindfulness, is to remember the instructions and to use mindfulness, of course, to remember, to hold the object, to remember the object. So that's the antidote for forgetfulness. Then we have the third twin faults of laxity and excitement, or dullness and distraction. So here, of course, we need to notice if we're becoming dull or distracted. So here the antidote is introspection. So introspection, the second main tool, this quality control. Introspection of monitoring our mindfulness, noticing if we're becoming dull or distracted. So this is the antidote to laxity and excitement or dullness and distraction, is to notice that through introspection, through that quality control. Then the fourth fault that's mentioned here is non-application. Non-application here means that we've noticed that there's a fault, we've noticed that we've become dull or distracted, but we don't do anything about it. That's a fault. So that's non-application. So the antidote to that is application. So here, of course, we're meaning fix the problem. So if we're becoming dull or distracted, then application can be simply to reapply mindfulness to the object. That could be the application here. Then the fifth fault is over-application. Now, over-application is not something that's too much of a problem as a beginner. It becomes more of an issue the further we get into the practice. Over-application is when we are unnecessarily adjusting our focus. It's when our focus is actually quite good on the object and we keep adjusting the focus unnecessarily. That's over-application. And here the antidote is equanimity. And here equanimity means balance, means leave the mind as it is, because the mind is already balanced. It's already focusing in a good way. So that's the antidote to over-application, is equanimity, is just leave the mind as it is. Don't keep adjusting the focus unnecessarily. So these are the five faults and the eight antidotes. Does anyone have any questions about any of those faults or antidotes?
I have a question about this over-application.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem that when concentrating my focus or focusing to the nostrils, then when it's coming very quite relaxed, then I find that when I'm trying to follow my breath, that when it's long or short, then that my abdomen it's coming kind of stuck. It's relaxed, but it's not moving in a way that then I'm concentrating in two points kind of way, and that it's difficult to say shortly.
Yeah.
In my English.
Yeah. So you're focusing here at the nostrils,
yes.
And then
I try to just follow the breath, but then I when it's quite relaxed.
Yeah.
Or I feel it's
relaxed. Yeah.
Then I my abdomen kind of if I'm breathing out, it can be going too far kind of, and then I notice that this part should be moving, so that I'm getting again
there can be a couple of things here that mm-hmm. we're going to look at later, but maybe briefly mention a couple of things. First is that also in our daily life, when we want to focus, often our habit is to hold our breath. That's often the case. If we want to focus, we tend to hold our breath. So this is something also, a habit that we need to overcome, because particularly here at the nostrils, it's a subtle object. And so to really pick it up, not only do we normally tense, but we end up holding our breath. So that's one thing that we need to let go of. And the other one, of course, is because it's a subtle object here, then people tend to force the breath so that they can pick up some sensations here. So that's another thing that we need to let go of. So they're two things that are very common by focusing here on the nostrils. But you will find that, of course, as the mind settles down and you're becoming more stable and clear here, you will find that the breath really settles down to the point where you can hardly notice that you're breathing. But that comes naturally through the more quieting the mind. So, but I think there's still something else there that I haven't picked up in your question. And maybe you can bring it up on then when we're talking about the nostrils on day three.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah. Anything else anyone would like to bring up? Okay. That's all I wanted to mention today in terms of the practice. We've looked briefly at the qualities, the objects, the tools, and now here we've looked at the faults and the antidotes. So what I'd like to do now is go back into the practice of the full body breath practice, observing sensations throughout the body. And in particular here, I'd like to begin by reading a little bit more about this practice from Alan Wallace's book. And in particular, this practice, as I've mentioned, the full body, is very good for working with relaxation. So if you find that the main fault that you have in your practice is you're really just too tight and too tense, then working on the full body practice can be very good for that. And also this practice, and this is what we're going to be doing each evening, is a very good practice to do at the end of every day. As we're going to see, one of the main things, of course, with practice is continuity, that we should have a daily meditation practice, but also continue to integrate this practice into daily life. And, of course, generally for meditative practice, very much recommended to do it first thing in the morning, and we're going to talk about the reasons for that later in the course, in the retreat. But also, of course, sometimes we'd like to maybe do some meditation at the end of every day. So if we can dedicate another session of meditation at the end of each day, that's fantastic. Many of us, of course, though, probably lead a very busy life and working and other commitments, maybe family commitments, and usually often quite tired at the end of the day. But certainly what we can do at the end of each day is we can use this full body practice as a mindfulness practice, but also as a transition to sleep. And that is what we can do is when we go to bed each evening, we can lie in bed flat on our back in what's called the Shavasana or the corpse posture in yoga, with the hands a little bit to the side, the palms facing upward. And then we can do this full body practice for some time. We can simply notice sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breathing. And we can do that for as long as we can maintain some attention, alertness. And then when we start to really get drowsy, then we can mentally note that our meditation is now finished and then move out of that posture into whatever posture we use for sleep. And in that way, we can associate the Shavasana with meditation. Now, when I first was introduced to this practice some years ago, I was very skeptical. I thought, well, I'm just going to fall asleep. I'm just going to be drowsy within about 30 seconds. And yes, it was true that the first few times I did it, I was quite drowsy quite quickly. But then the more I got into this posture for meditation, the more I found that actually I could maintain alertness in that very relaxed posture because the body is completely relaxed. So much so now that generally when I do a meditation retreat, and you know, you're sitting quite a number of hours each day, maybe by the end of the day your body's a little bit fatigued or the knees are starting to hurt a little bit, then generally now in retreat, in the evening sessions, I only use the Shavasana, the corpse posture, to meditate. So not only can you use it as a transition to sleep lying in bed, but you can also use it as a valid meditation posture. And I found that after the initial stages of getting used to this posture, that actually in the evening I could lie in that posture and really maintain very good alertness for an entire session. So I find it very helpful because the body is completely relaxed. And certainly it's much more inviting if we're a bit fatigued and tired to, you know, have to think, oh, I have to sit down in meditation posture versus, oh, I can lie down, you know. That's much more inviting into that posture. And so we can certainly use that for meditation. And so also in this retreat, if you have some knee problems or back problems, or particularly maybe later in the day when your knees are starting to hurt a little bit, then you're quite welcome to use that posture in the meditation sessions during this retreat. And we're going to use that each evening session. We're going to finish in this posture each evening session. So before we go into that practice again now, I'll just read a little bit more about it from Alan Wallace's book here. Again, on page 19, halfway down, he says, "This is a field approach to training the attention. Instead of pinpointing the attention on a mental image, a prayer, a mantra, or a specific region of the body, open your awareness to the entire field of sensations throughout the body, especially those related to respiration. The emphasis here is on mental and physical relaxation. If you constrict your mind and your body, shamatha training will aggravate the tension you already have. By settling your awareness in the body, you diffuse the knots in the body and mind. Tightness unravels of its own accord, and this soothes the network of the body. Mindfulness of breathing is universally emphasized for those who are especially prone to compulsive thinking. As the 5th century Buddhist master Asanga comments, so he's quoting Asanga, who's a great Indian master, who said, "If involuntary thoughts particularly dominate your behavior, then focus the mind in mindfulness of the exhalation and inhalation of the breath." Then he goes on to say, "Since nearly everyone living in the modern world is coping with an overload of thinking, remembering, and planning, this may be just what the doctor ordered, a general prescription for soothing and healing overworked bodies and minds. Although Buddhism generally encourages cross-legged meditation, the Buddha encouraged his followers to practice in any of 4 postures, that of walking, standing, sitting, and lying down. Any of these positions is perfectly suitable. Not everyone living in the modern world has the same type of mind or nervous system. If you tend toward excitation, you may find lying down especially helpful for releasing the tightness and restlessness of your body and mind. But if you are more prone to laxity, you may simply fall asleep whenever you lie down. So it may be necessary for you to be in upright when meditating. Lying down can also be very useful for meditation if you're physically tired but not yet ready for bed. In this case, you may not be able to rouse yourself to sit upright in a posture of vigilance, but the prospect of lying down for a while may be inviting. Surrender to your body's need to rest and use the supine position to calm the mind as well. This likely will be much more refreshing and soothing than watching television or reading a newspaper. The supine posture may be your only option if you are ill, injured, or frail. It may be especially useful for meditation by those in hospitals, senior care facilities, and hospices. Mindfulness of breathing is great for preparing your mind for mental training, but it can also help you fall asleep. If you suffer from insomnia, the above method can help release tension in your body and mind when you go to bed at night. If you wake up in the middle of the night and have a hard time falling back asleep, mindfulness of breathing can help you disengage from the thoughts that flood the mind. According to recent studies, about 80% of Americans are chronically sleep deprived. So even if all this practice does is help you catch up on your sleep, that's worth a good deal. So that's what we're going to be doing now and each evening. So what we're going to do, like I said, each evening, there'll be time for some question-answer regarding the day's practice, of course. And then I'll talk a little bit about a few of these stages each evening over the next 4 or 5 nights. And then at the end of each evening, we're going to do this practice of using the corpse posture. And so that's what we're going to do now. So each of you have got one cushion, so you can lie on that. And if you also have like a shawl or something that you want to put your head on or so forth, or if it's a bit cool, you can put it over the top of yourself as well. That's fine. So just spread out, make yourselves some space. So lying flat on your back, feet should be a little bit apart, hands to the side, palms up, and your hands a little bit away from the body. And so we're going to do this about 15 minutes or so each evening, just as a way of relaxing. Thank you. So letting go of any external distractions. Simply allow your awareness to descend into your body. Particularly becoming aware of sensations where your body is touching the cushion. Again, if you notice any areas of tightness or tension in any part of the body, then use the out-breath to relax and release that tightness or tension. Bringing your awareness to the area of your face, softening and relaxing all the muscles in the face. The mouth and jaw soft and relaxed. And all the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. Allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. And relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. The breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly. with each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen, happily releasing them. And bringing your attention into the present moment through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body, wherever you most distinctly notice sensations associated with the breath. Maintaining that ongoing flow of mindfulness, of the sensations of the breath, throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. Relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. maintaining the ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath throughout the body. And then we can slowly bring this meditation to a close and to sit up, then just roll over onto your side in your own time, and then very gently in a fluid motion we can sit up, but again in your own time, no rush. So we're going to be finishing each day with that meditation. And so at the end of each evening when we finish, then I won't mention anything after the meditation. We'll just finish and then you can, in your own time, then you can leave or stay as long as you want. But tomorrow then, just to recap what's happening. So again, the wake up will be at 5:45, 5:45. And then at 6:15 there will be the moving meditation out here with Mick in the grassy area for about 20 minutes. And then a short break. And then at 6:45 back in here, there'll be the morning meditation for 45 minutes. So it'll be two 20-minute sessions with a 2-minute break. And it'll be the full body practice that we've been practicing today. And so Tet will be leading the morning sessions for that. So he'll be leading that. And then breakfast at 7:30. And then I'll come back here at 9 o'clock and we'll start to look at the abdomen practice for tomorrow. Okay. Any last questions before we finish today?
Would this house be open?
Yes, I think so. I don't think so you can stay in here and read and meditate, and I don't think it's ever locked, is it, Nick?
No.
No, it's always open, so no problems there. Anything else anyone would like to bring up now? So the silence starts when you go to sleep this evening. So if you want to continue to have a little chat this evening, that's fine. But when you go to sleep, then silence begins, and it'll finish on the last morning of the retreat. Okay. So have a nice evening, and I wish you all a wonderful retreat, and I'll see you tomorrow morning.